In today's episode of the Neil Wilkins podcast, Julie Morehouse joins me. Julie is the founder of Good Maker Tales, and this is a website that will give you a perspective and hopefully lots of prompts, lots of ideas on the topic of sustainable and ethical fashion. Now, you might think, well, I'm not in the fashion industry, so what's this got to do with me? But I'll bet I will be pretty confident that you wear clothes, so therefore it has everything to do with you. So welcome, Julie, to the podcast.
Hello, thank you very much.
Did I kind of get that right? Because there is something in this for everybody, isn't there? This isn't
Absolutely.
Just for the makers. This isn't just for the supply chain. This is for all of us to be kind of really mindful about, isn't it?
It totally is. And you're absolutely right. Everybody wears clothes generally. So most people I know anyway. So you're right. It applies to everybody. And I've been asked that question before. Who does sustainable fashion apply to? It applies to everyone. And, you know, all of us buy clothes, all of us have to make those decisions, and all of us have the power in our hands to make a difference with the decisions that we make. Every single person does.
And this isn't something you've been doing forever, is it? Because share with the audience a little bit about your backstory, because you kind of came upon this as a thing that you were doing, not doing, and you kind of sort of, you know, found yourself being drawn into this. But where did it all kind of begin for you?
Yeah, so I've always been a big fan of sustainability, but I didn't think about clothes. So my background is working as a chartered surveyor for many years in commercial buildings, commercial real estate, leasing. Latterly, I was in retail, so I was doing leasing for shopping centres, which means finding new people to come and take shops in shopping centres. That was in the UK, and then it was in Spain. I also worked in Abu Dhabi before that for a few years on a zero carbon city. So again, I was very interested in sustainable buildings and how green the buildings were, how efficient they were and all of that. But I didn't think about clothes. And I was, meanwhile, talking about sustainability, nipping out to go and buy a new top or some new trousers or a new dress or, you know, and just not thinking about it at all. So it just wasn't on my radar. It wasn't that I didn't care. I absolutely did care about sustainability, but I just didn't know about it. And I really think there's so many people that care, that want to be environmentally conscious, that want to be ethical, don't want to cause harm to animals or to people, but they'd have no idea about their clothes and the impact of their clothes and their massive impact. So I ended up watching a film called The True Cost, which is, I would recommend to everyone that you go and watch it. It's called The True Cost. And it's the true cost of our clothes. And it's really about where they come from. And I was just so shocked. I couldn't believe it. But at the same time, looking back retrospectively, it kind of seemed obvious. You know, it's funny how many things we learn that you suddenly think, gosh, that's so obvious once you know. So I learned about it. At the same time, I got made redundant from my job. Because the company was closing down. I was pregnant, I was 6 months pregnant, and it was the middle of COVID. So I didn't really want to look for another job. And so I thought, I want to do something completely different. I'm going to start up a website. And I wanted to do it about something that I cared about, I was passionate about, and sustainability seemed like the right thing, and sustainable fashion seemed to be a particularly interesting thing to talk about. So a lot of it I've learned as I've gone along. Choose an article to write about and then learn more and more about that topic. So we've over 150 articles now on the website, so there's a lot to learn. it wasn't a deliberate plan of mine. I always thought I'd end up working in sustainable buildings, not sustainable fashion. So I don't come from a fashion background, but I definitely come from a green mindset background, but just someone that's been made aware, which I think more and more people are getting made aware all the time about the impact of our clothes.
Yeah, and I think for me, this is a really, really clear and really, really positive point, is that, you know, it is all around us, these opportunities for being more eco, sustainable, green, whatever you want to sort of call it. There's these opportunities that are literally surrounding us, but the trick is actually spotting them and then actually taking ownership. One of the things that I'm getting sort of very actively involved in is the whole Carbon Literacy Trust certified carbon literate training courses. I, with a colleague, deliver through Cambridge Martin College one of these courses each month. And one of the key things in that carbon literacy training is to identify a personal commitment that you are going to then action or take action upon. And this is often one of the really tricky things. People say, okay, I get the big picture. I can see the, you know, the poles are melting. I can see that there's plastic in the oceans. I can do that. But it feels so distant. And yet something like this, which, you know, we've already identified, we're actually wearing this stuff. It's actually on us, this opportunity. Do you find when you start to kind of talk to people, it becomes a very real thing, because it isn't about necessarily just the supply chain and these distant kind of far off lands where, you know, people aren't necessarily, but I do want to come on to this, this particular topic, but where people aren't necessarily being rewarded or, you know, sort of handled or dealt with, you know, in an ethical way. It is something that's very, very personal, because we are physically surrounded, physically, by the clothes that we're wearing. So it's right here on us. So there is something that we can really own here in terms of our choices, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about sustainable fashion that I always hear is that it's really expensive. So people think, oh, you know, I'd like to buy sustainable fashion, but it's really expensive. And the point is that the most sustainable fashion you have is the clothes that you already own. Those are the most sustainable clothes. The ones that are already in your wardrobe, because you've already bought them. They've already had their impact. So the worst thing you can do is throw them in the bin, because then they'll have more impact, you know, getting thrown into landfill or whatever, and actually going out and buying new clothes. So buying new clothes is the most impactful thing, whether you buy from a fast fashion brand or a sustainable brand. Obviously you can reduce your impact by buying from a sustainable brand, but reusing the clothes you already have, most of us have more clothes than we need, upcycling, recycling, mending, altering the clothes that we already have, buying secondhand certainly is not more expensive than buying new. Clothes swapping, there's clothes swapping events are suddenly really popular, so swapping clothes, because we all have clothes that we don't wear. And some of them might never have been worn hardly. We might have worn them once or twice and then never really wear them again. Clothes swapping, renting, the rental model obviously is very big now. If you're going to a wedding, why spend a few hundred pounds or even £100 on a dress when you can rent one? Because you're probably not going to wear it again. I've certainly got clothes that I've bought for weddings and then thought, why did I spend that much money on that dress? Never worn it again. So all of that stuff is actually not expensive. And then there are some amazing sustainable fashion brands out there that are doing things more affordably. So there's a brand that I love called Yes Friends from Bristol, who started off creating an organic cotton t-shirt made ethically for £7.99. I think it sells for £12 now. So, you know, they were trying to prove the point that you don't have to spend all of that money to be ethical and be sustainable. But actually, if you are buying less clothes, which is what we probably all need to do, if you're buying less clothes, then when you do make a purchase, which should be thought of as an investment, then perhaps you have a little bit more money to buy something that is sustainably made, that's better quality. We've all become so conditioned to paying rock bottom prices for clothes that have been made in unethical supply chains, probably not with the best fabrics. And so therefore, unfortunately, we see things as being expensive that probably aren't actually expensive. They're just normal prices. So it affects all of us. And it's just the choices that we make. We can vote with our feet.
Yeah, which is the key thing here, isn't it? I mean, I've tussled with this word consumption being consumers, and this word that kind of implies as marketers, and obviously there's a lot of marketers, as you know, listening to this particular episode, and they'll be kind of very mindful that there is this balance they need to strike with helping their audience or their customers to consume properly, but not to be necessarily consumers, because by the word consume, it means that we're actually taking more resources, we're taking more of, you know, the precious kind of, you know, resources of the planet. And so what we're trying to do here is kind of balance the serving of the customer's need with actually not necessarily encouraging them to buy more. And it's a really difficult kind of equation, I think, in a lot of industries. But I'm really sort of picking up on some of the ideas that you've got there in terms of this, you know, the most sustainable way of sort of thinking about your sustainable fashion is that you don't buy anymore. You actually look at your own wardrobe.
What you've got.
That's really fascinating, what you've got. Because, I mean, one of the things that we do, which sounds possibly a little bit crazy, but we've got quite a few beanbags in our house at home here. And we're looking at sort of stuffing those beanbags, not with kind of these polystyrene pellets, which keep the beanbag all nice and fluffy and light and stuff, but actually putting old clothes that we're no longer using into the beanbag.
Such a good idea.
And it kind of is, they're pretty uncomfortable, it has to be said, once they kind of all like start bundling and bunching up. But it almost then gives a purpose to those things that would otherwise either go to landfill or become dusters around the house. But then having been then dusters around the house, what do you do with them then? So yeah. There is this kind of finite life if you're continually using them. But if you just have them sat there and they become almost a seat for you to sit in, that kind of feels okay, doesn't it? So are you kind of advocating then that when we purchase something, either be something more practical in terms of clothing or a fashion item, that we should be thinking beyond the actual wearing of it? Because it feels like if we can then think beyond the wearing of it, we've actually given it more of a just a clothing kind of life to the actual item. Because that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways that I think are a good way for a clothing item to end its life. One of them is that it's repaired. And so I just recently interviewed Nudie Jeans, and they offer free repairs for life. So they create high quality jeans. And then if they, well, break is not really the right word for jeans, but if they wear out or whatever, they will offer you free repairs, or they'll take them back and use that denim to repair other jeans or create a new pair of jeans from them. So that I think of is a really great end of life to a product, where it's not really ending it, it's keeping it in circulation. And that's the idea, that it gets kept in circulation. Then there's another brand that I work with called Stripe and Stare, and they sell underwear. And their underwear, I haven't tried this yet, is biodegradable. So they actually have a video on their website, and you can see this pair of knickers, basically, in a jar of soil over a period of time, several months, biodegrading. So I actually have some underwear from that brand. So I would like to stick it in a plant pot, because I haven't done it yet, and see if that, you know, if they biodegrade back, because they actually made from, so viscose. Is from viscose is a very common type of fabric. It kind of mimics silk, but it comes from, a lot of it comes from very unsustainable forests, and it's basically tree pulp that's treated with a lot of chemicals, which unfortunately in most cases are released into the local waterways, creating a lot of toxic waste. However, there's new kinds of viscose like Tencel and Modal, which are made from sustainable forests, and they're made in a what they call closed loop production process, where the chemicals are much more sustainable chemicals, but also they're kept in circulation, so they're reused, they're not washed into local waterways. And these particular underwear, I think they're made from, I can't remember if they're made from Tencel or Modal, one of the two, but anyway, so essentially it's wood pulp, so you're dissolving it back into soil. So it's organic, but it's organically made. So, you know, and cotton is the same, you know, theoretically we could stick our old cotton underwear into a plant pot and let it biodegrade. So there's more and more very exciting biodegradable materials coming out now. You can buy plant-based leathers. So you can buy trainers made of apple skin leather or pinyatex from pineapple, cactus leather. There's all sorts of really exciting plant leathers. So I think there's two ways to see the end of life of our clothes, either that we biodegrade them back into the earth, or we repair them or give them to somebody else and keep them in circulation and keep them being reused. Or put them in our beanbags.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do we kind of keep on top of this? Because it feels like if I go down my local high street and I see something I like and it kind of, they've got the size, the price is right, I go in, I buy it, I'm taking it home, I'm starting to wear it. And then I think, oh, hold on a minute, it's a bit late now. I've already got it. Oh, yeah. No, I didn't actually do the research. So I'm actually a little bit further downstream. It feels like there's a heck of a lot of research that needs to go in upstream before I even begin to kind of think, right, what clothing items do I want, so that I can actually do the research to find out if the organization who's created this thing, so not the retailer, but the actual organization, the brand who's created this particular product, hasn't been, as you described it there, releasing those toxins into those rivers. Mm. How do I kind of find this stuff out upstream? Because literally, figuratively and literally upstream, because it's so critical, isn't it? Because if I don't think about this until it's too late, then it's too late. So where do I get this kind of intelligence, if you like, so that I know that I'm properly buying from things I can trust?
It's such a good point. I mean, that was one of the reasons I started off Good Maker Tales, because when I was looking for sustainable fashion brands, a lot of the websites were based in the States. So it was kind of stuff that was not accessible to me, or Australia even. So I set up Good Maker Tales specifically to cater to the UK market, and also a little bit to the European market, although now, because Brexit, there is quite a big difference between European brands and British brands, because there's the tax customs implications if you're sending between Europe and the UK. So you can look certainly on my website and find there's a lot of brand guides. So we have, you know, might be a guide to sustainable sandals or sustainable flip-flops or sustainable winter coats or vegan coats, whatever. So I have lots of brands that are brand guide, you know, kind of guidelines. There's also something that I really like to use, which is the Good On You app. That's nothing to do with Good Maker Tales. It's called Good On You. They are an association that was based in Australia, set up in Australia, but it's gone global. And it's an app that you can download, and you can literally put in the brand name. It doesn't cover smaller brands. It covers big brands, generally kind of more international brands, although it's covering more and more small brands as well. And it will give you a rating. So it will tell you on three strands: people, planet and animals, which is the way that I think of sustainable fashion too, how it affects the planet, so how sustainable its materials and its processes are, how it treats its people and its supply chain, and whether or not any animal products are used, and how ethical they are in terms of the treatment of animals in their supply chain. And it will give them a rating, and it's kind of five different things that they can have, the best being very good and good being good as well. There's also Remake. So I'm an ambassador for Remake, and Remake are an organization that that really fight for garment worker rights. So they're kind of looking at that. And they also have brand guidelines. So they don't have as many brands covered as Good On You. They don't have an app, but they do have a brand guideline document that comes out every year. It's just recently come out, and that covers bigger brands as well. So we can use those resources. Those are other people that have done the research for us to see good brands. But just something else I would add to that is, and this is something that I'm really conscious of, especially given my previous role working in shopping centres and retail, is that a lot of sustainable fashion brands aren't in the shops, and you can't find them on the high street. And so therefore it is slightly more difficult to access them. Although it's nice to see more and more sustainable fashion brands starting to open stores. And you're certainly starting to see more brands starting to open stores in London, also starting to go into big chains like John Lewis and Selfridges, which is great because people can touch and feel the product. There's something really amazing about being able to touch and feel something before you buy it, isn't there? I mean, you know, we've all bought stuff that's the wrong colour or the wrong size or not quite what you thought, and you end up having to send it back, which is really unsustainable as well. So it's there's so many strands. Sorry to take such a long time to answer your question, but there's just so many strands to that question, really, because it's such a good point. You know, convenience is so important for most of us, because most of us have less and less time. And you just, if you want to go and buy a new blouse or trousers or whatever, you want to just go to a shop and buy them. You don't want to have to do reams of research before you go and buy it. So, but it is just a case of being more conscious and, you know, going to your kind of conscious kind of mindset, being conscious about what we buy and being conscious consumers, and not just going out and seeing a $7.99 dress and thinking, oh, I'll have that, without really thinking about it. Mm. There was a piece of advice I read once, which is, you know, if you want to buy something, sleep on it, you know, and sleep on it again and sleep on it again and think about it, and don't just buy it straight away, because then it's a, you know, it's a purchase that you probably didn't really need to make.
So are we redefining this kind of leisure pursuit for some people, which is I'm going to go shopping? Because it feels like that is so now so outdated. And yet I still hear people, there's people in my kind of world who would say, yeah, we're going shopping today. And I'm thinking, okay. And I'm not going to judge here, but I'm just kind of, I'm noting that that is, it feels like it was something that maybe 20, 30 years ago, we might have heard our parents say, oh, yeah, we're going to go shopping. But it isn't a leisure pursuit. It's like you don't ever now sort of see people going out for a drive. We're going to go out for a drive because people are much more conscious of like, actually, that's not a good thing to do. Are we kind of sort of seeing really a change? Well, hopefully a sort of a migration to a change in overall behaviors and habits here, because it feels that it kind of goes beyond just purely clothing here, because you could apply the way that you're describing this to any form of, you know, purchase that we do. It should be slow, it should be thoughtful, it should be, you know, less chaotic and convenient. Sort of convenience stores now feel again a little bit outdated, don't they?
Yeah, and you're so right, you know, and it's a shame because, you know, shopping, I can't say anything. I used to go shopping as a pastime as well. You know, I was going to say not recently, but actually it was something that I probably would have done on my lunch hour. You know, I had a bad morning. I'm just going to go and buy a new dress or buy a new something. And that wasn't that long ago. So I completely understand it. Sometimes shopping gives you this kind of mental short-term buzz that, you know, buying, having something new. But actually, then look at kind of a great movement is minimalism that's coming up. You know, how full are our houses of stuff that we don't need? And how stressful is that? And, you know, I have two young children and the amount of stuff, the amount of stuff that goes with that is incredible. And the amount of stuff that people give us as well. Oh, our children don't need this anymore. Would you like this? And I'm kind of a bit like, no, I don't want any more stuff. Thank you. So actually, even though we might get the short-term buzz from going shopping and buying more stuff that we don't need, we've then got to find a place for it in our homes. And, you know, so many people have their wardrobes bursting and guess what? They can't find anything. And that's stressful. It's actually stressful having too much stuff because you can't find the things that you need. Clothes are all rammed in there. They're all creased because there's not enough space for them. So actually, it's better for our mental health not to go out buying stuff all the time, because it doesn't make you any happier in the long run. It might give you a short-term buzz, but actually it just makes us miserable having loads of stuff. I definitely think that. And, you know, you see more and more stories of people who have just gone completely minimalist and got rid of what I'd love to do this, haven't done it, you know, get rid of everything and they've given everything away. They've completely downsized their life and they're so much happier. And there's so much in that. I mean, it's not great for industry. And this is the problem. We live in a capitalist society where actually companies need to keep showing continual growth to their shareholders. And that's how our society works. You know, business has to make money. So it's very difficult. It's difficult. It's a difficult one.
When the system doesn't support that, then you're always feeling like you're pushing water uphill, don't you? I mean, I can imagine as, you know, an organization, you know, a big kind of clothing brand might be, you know, absolutely tussling with that. They're feeling the pressure from the shareholders, but the supply chain is starting to go eco now and they're feeling pulled along in that way. The customers are now, hopefully some of the customers are now making demands on them. We want to see your credentials. We want to see what you're attempting to do. We know you're not perfect, but you're on a journey and that's good enough, but we want to see it. And yet they're being pulled in this other direction. Make more money, make more money. Do you see when you're kind of doing your interviews and you're talking to these brands, do you see a sort of a change in mindset that we're moving away from it just being about profit and it being something a little bit more, I don't know, broad, maybe a bit more kind of purpose driven? I know that there are a few examples of the Patagonias of this world, which are always used as the kind of the North Star, if you like, the leading light of, you know, we don't actually sell clothes. We sell a whole lifestyle now. And, you know, we don't want you to buy our product because we want you to do something with it. And all those amazing kind of campaigns that they've done. Are you seeing kind of an increasing groundswell to organizations who are, yeah, they still obviously have to be commercially viable, but they're actually there for a different purpose?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're right. They have to be commercially viable, which is commercially sustainable. So they've got to be sustainable economically as well as environmentally and ethically. And there are more and more brands starting to do that. And there are more big brands starting to make ethical kind of sustainable movements. So although I have to say, I do see, you know, smaller brands that are opening up and doing sustainable things, you know, some of them do unfortunately go under because it's their cost base is higher. You know, it is more expensive to pay workers in your supply chain more. It doesn't have to be that much more expensive because actually, if you look at the actual amount, there's the Clean Clothes Campaign have an amazing website. And if you look on their website, you can see the cost of a T-shirt. And I think it has a $19 T-shirt and it breaks down. The biggest chunk is marketing, what you're actually paying for. And then the amount of the percentage that goes to a worker is so tiny that actually you could almost double their wage and it would only put a few cents onto the price of the T-shirt. So it doesn't have to be such a big amount. But so more sustainably sourcing your products, not creating overconsumption and not creating en masse is more expensive. Although there is an argument that if you don't create as much waste, you actually save money as well. Rapa Nui have a great interview about that. If you look on YouTube, they do it. There's a TED Talk, the founder of Rapa Nui, he's called Mark Drake Knight. And he says how they actually saved money by doing just on-time production. So when you order a T-shirt from them, it gets printed in that moment because of digital, you know, the website and everything, and it goes straight through to their factory and it gets printed in that moment. So they actually save money by not having waste. So there's an argument there that you can save money. But if you look at these mass fashion brands, there's I think 40% of all clothes are never even sold. You know, that's massive, 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 massive amounts of waste. But sorry, going back to your original question. So there are bigger brands, and one of the best is H&M in terms of the amount of sustainable initiatives that they are undertaking. And there's a lot and lot and lot of things that they're doing. They will always be promoting overconsumption. So they can do a lot of nice things, and they are doing things. And certainly when it comes to fast fashion, they are up there as one of the best. They're doing the most sustainable initiatives. They're involved in research. They've just signed up to, with Bestseller, the owner of Jack and Jones, to do more research into off-power wind energy for Bangladesh, which doesn't have any off-power wind energy at the moment. That was signed at COP28. H&M are doing more and more stuff, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, they are promoting fast fashion and they are promoting overconsumption of things that we don't need. But that is their business model. And it's really difficult. You know, I think that they are leading the way for fast fashion brands, but fast fashion, ultimately, the business model is not sustainable environmentally.
Yeah, so it feels like then it's a start. So this is kind of like just an awakening and awareness piece that is like, right, guys, we're going to do something different here. We're going to have all these initiatives. But then it almost implies that the back office then, the systems, the processes, the supply chain, that also then needs to be really fully understood to support a new model at the front end. Because otherwise, this word greenwashing, it's going to rear its head, isn't it? And then the customer's then going to look at this and think, okay, you're talking about all these amazing things you're doing up front, but we've looked behind, or we've seen the reports about actually what the systems are behind the process there. And actually, we don't now believe you. And then, of course, then the whole brand thing comes down like a pack of cards falling down, doesn't it? Because you have to be able to justify these initiatives. So it's a system and process thing as much as it is the glossy front end of marketing. So that is, it's a hard thing. You've got to fully commit, haven't you, if you're really going to go for this?
Yeah, it's really difficult. I certainly don't have the answers. But I have to say, I am in constant admiration of some of the amazing sustainable fashion brands out there and the job that they're doing and the efforts that they're making. You know, they are driving innovation. They're driving innovation for the big guys because they're the ones that are out there sourcing new materials. I was talking to you before about the plant-based leathers, for example, sourcing new ways of doing things like TENCEL and Modal, a new way of doing viscose, sourcing new, looking at new ways of how they can pay their workers better in the supply chain. So some brands, for example, it's quite difficult paying the workers a fair wage when they're sharing the factory with other brands. So quite a few brands now kind of pay a top up to their workers, or to, sorry, pay a top-up across the factory for the proportion of products that they had made in the factory. It's also interesting that when you talk to brands like Plant-Based Clothing, for example, who are a vegan brand, they talk about not only how insects are ground up, for example, in dyes, which I'd never heard about, but actually also there are certain animal products used in the wash that's used for the printing, I don't know what it's called, but the printing, the things that you use to print T-shirts with, the thing that's used to wash that, the mesh, I guess it is, contains animal products as well. So it's not just a case of having a leather jacket, it's a case of how the mesh that printed our T-shirt is washed. You know, so there's so many things that we don't think of, and there's brands out there saying, well, we have thought about this because we really care about it, and so therefore we're going to innovate and find a new way to wash that mesh or to create that dye. And so they're innovating, and I think, and they're not doing it for profit, for loads of profit. They obviously have to make it a viable business, but they're doing it because they really, really, really believe in it. And so therefore they're bringing more attention to these issues, and they are innovating, and therefore the big brands are eventually going to follow suit. So I'm just constantly in awe of what they're doing, because like I say, they're not doing it for big money. If they wanted to do it for big money, they could go and just be a big fast fashion brand and sell en masse. So I think they are amazing, and I'm just kind of honored to be able to tell their story, really, because I'm not one of the ones doing it. I'm just talking to them and trying to kind of get their story out there.
Feels like those guys, though, if they're able, because the business model allows them to be a little bit patient and just play that long game, it feels like those would be the kind of organizations who are going to win in the end. Because this old model, I know systemically it is what, you know, we reward financial success. The whole, you know, capitalist model is designed to do that. But it feels like as all of these emerging brands, this new way of thinking, this whole circular business, circular economy starts to really cut in, it feels like brands like the one you've just described there, they're the long-term winners. If they can just hold out, stay true to purpose, hold on to those values, do the right thing for, and let me just see if I can get this right from what you described here. So it's planet, people and animals. Nice, yeah. Mix. I love that mix. Those three elements, which we can all start to critique the brands we think about, you know, again. So that's great. I mean, if they're able to hold out, it feels like those will be the winners, because there is a gaining kind of, I guess, appetite from people who are looking to buy fashion to go down a more sustainable route, because we're almost embarrassed not to in some ways, yeah. Aren't we?
Well, I think perhaps you and I are, but I think there's a lot of people who aren't, and you know, and I count myself previously in that group of people, so I'm not judging at all, who just don't have it on the radar. You know, I didn't have it on my radar just a few years ago. So, and it's not through lack of caring or lack of wanting. It wasn't on my radar. So I guess it's getting more and more onto people's radar, and brilliantly talking to you is hopefully going to get it onto even more people's radar, which is fantastic. But I don't know how long these brands can hold on for. And something that I was going to say on that is government regulation. And unfortunately, at the moment, government regulation is just not there to support these brands, because if the government was regulating so that fast fashion brands had to do the same thing, then it would be a level playing ground. But at the moment, you've got, and I watched, it's one of the Remake ambassador calls that we do every month. And Alden Wicker, who is a sustainable fashion journalist, she was actually on the call, which was amazing. And she was actually saying, the small brands out there going, excuse me, can we have some legislation, please? It's not fair. You know, we're not on a level playing field. And so the government need to be legislating. And actually, there's more and more governments starting to legislate in Europe. The UK is behind, I would say. So France is doing really well. They've got the EPR, and I forgot what that stands for, but producer responsibility. So basically extended producer responsibility. And that means that people who make clothes, the brands or the retailers that make clothes, will be responsible for their recycling at the end of life, whether that is with their own recycling scheme, it has to be an approved scheme, or whether they have to make a financial contribution towards France's general recycling of textiles, which doesn't really exist in a lot of other countries. Those producers will be responsible. So they're now having to think about how recyclable their clothes are when they make them, which is amazing. The government has done that. And that's coming in across more countries in Europe. It's not there in the UK yet. That's just one example. The government can also regulate for trade, you know, for fair labour, for supply chains and for transparency. There was a report in, again, I think it was 2019, that were called Fixing Fashion, where a report was put to the UK government with a whole load of recommendations about how they could improve the fashion industry. And the government didn't take on board even one. They just said, it should be voluntary. So, you know, the government's got a long way to go to help these smaller brands to make a level playing field, because it's not level at the moment. Brands can get away with being completely unsustainable. You've got Shein out there doing things in quite a bad way. We've got Boohoo, who are yet another scandal now. They've got products in the last couple of months that have labels saying made in the UK, which were actually made in Pakistan. They've got people in their factory in the UK taking those labels off and sewing in a made in the UK label. That's just recently come out of Boohoo. So now they're going to close their UK plant. So there won't be anything made in the UK, genuinely. So unfortunately, brands like that, okay, they've been caught out there, but brands like that are still getting away with it. And so therefore, when you're those smaller brands who are doing things really well are competing against those brands that are producing for nothing, because they're producing in unscrupulous ways, then you just hope that the brands can hold on long enough and that governments will come in and legislate. I hope that they do. I really hope that they do.
And it is really thanks to you, Julie, and your kind of website, goodmakertales.com. Little shameless plug there. And we will put that as a link into the description for this episode. But it is kind of thanks to you and others who are doing what you're doing to kind of really just open everybody's eyes to both the possibilities, but also to some of the ways that you can be practical about this. So, you know, I think we're all very grateful to you for the kind of energy that you're putting into this, because, you know, every industry needs a Julie, basically, to be able to kind of sort of, you know, just really open up the opportunity to find out more. Because I think this is the hardest thing is, you know, if you do a search on sustainable fashion, and you're going to be inundated with comments, blogs, videos, just all this kind of stuff from a whole range of different sources. A lot of those will have their own vested interest in positioning it in a certain way. So to actually have somewhere that is an objective, reliable, central resource that you can go to when you're slowing down in your purchase decisions with clothing, it's just so valuable for all, isn't it?
I hope so. And I would just add one more motivation that has kind of become more of an interest of mine recently, which I think people can think about. So I started off thinking people, planet and animals. And when I was talking about people, I was talking about people in the supply chain who make our clothes and how they are treated, and also the chemicals that they're exposed to during production, the waste that they're paid, the conditions under which they work, child labour, which unfortunately still goes on. Certainly cotton picking is rife for child labour. However, what we don't think about is ourselves. So we don't think that we're getting affected by our clothes. And this is a very, very selfish reason that if people don't care about any of the other reasons that people should think about this, is that the toxic chemicals used to make our clothes affect us. And we don't really think about that. And we just assume that our clothes are safe, that the governments have regulated, that anything that's unsafe has been regulated against and no longer can exist. And to a certain degree, that's true. And some of the most toxic chemicals have now been removed from our clothing. But there are many chemicals that are still used to create clothes that unfortunately are not really that safe and still need to be regulated against. And so I'm a big fan of labels such as Oekotex, which is spelled OEKO-TEX, and also people like Blue Sign, because they actually give a stamp and say this clothing is not toxic and is safe to wear, which is ridiculous, isn't it? You just assume when you buy clothes from a shop that it is safe to wear. But fabrics like polyester, which is made from fossil fuels, made from oil, is very, very flammable. So for example, it's treated with anti-inflammatory chemicals. In fact, in the 1970s, they reckon that all children's pajamas were treated with anti-inflammatory chemicals, you know, and they're absolutely toxic. They're forever chemicals, which are really, really toxic, carcinogenic. And these toxins are getting into our clothes. And so I'm a big proponent of looking for organic, natural materials when you're buying clothes. It's not always that easy to find. But certainly cotton, even cotton, you think of it as a natural material, is heavily treated with pesticides and fertilizers. It's the biggest user crop in the world that uses industrial-wise, it's the biggest crop that uses chemicals such as fertilizers and pesticides. So organic materials, and I previously in the past would have thought, oh, organic, you know, I don't need organic, what's all this whole organic thing? And now I realize what it is. It means that we're safe. That's what it means. So if you care about your own health, you know, those are the types of things that we should be looking out for. And I was actually very shocked a few months ago to read, and I've done an article about it. There was several studies done good 20, 30 years ago by a professor in Egypt, and they haven't been replicated, but there was a lot of studies done that showed that polyester underwear can cause infertility, particularly in men. There's a lot of studies done. So that's something that absolutely shocked me. And it's not actually due to the chemicals, amazingly. It's due to the electrostatic potential of polyester. So there's another reason not to wear polyester if you care about your fertility. And fertility is generally linked to general health. So if your body is fertile, it means that it's generally a healthy body. So even if you don't want to have children, you should definitely be thinking about those things. So if people really don't care about the environment, they really don't care about workers in the supply chain, and they really don't care about animals that much, but most people care about themselves. I would say that's a really selfish reason to care about sustainable fashion and to care about the clothes that you put on your skin, and to think about it. Because actually another reason, I listened to a podcast about beauty products that have a lot of these products in. And actually what it was saying was that our digestive system is very good at getting rid of things that are bad for the body, but the skin isn't. Skin just absorbs and doesn't have a digestive system. So actually the stuff we put on our skin, we almost need to think about more than the stuff we eat. So there's my rant, anyway. That's a bit of a rant about another reason why you should really think about the clothes that you buy or that you put onto your body.
Brilliant. This has been so, so good. I mean, so many examples, so many links to check out, so many opportunities to kind of own it. And I think what I'm taking away from this, Julie, is the fact that we don't have to just be looking at everybody else. We don't have to look at all the brand. We've got to start with ourselves. Just slow it down. Slow those purchase decisions down. Don't just go shopping. Actually do your research before you go, before you make those choices, and think of your fashion for lifetime. Don't just think about, I'm going to wear this particular dress or these particular trousers. It's okay, but what happens then? And so we're actually thinking much more mindfully about each individual item that we purchase, but start with what you've got. I love that. I had not thought of that at all. The fact that you start with what you've actually got in your wardrobe today. What a great starting point. Really, really powerful. Yeah.
Well, like Julie, I said before, it seems obvious once you think about it, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. Julie, I want to send so many people to your website now. So I mean, it's goodmakertales.com.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Julie, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing all these places.
Likewise.
That you don't look. So, so useful. And I think for everybody, fashion or otherwise, if you're into this or not, you're wearing clothes. Therefore, this means
you. It's important.
It is important. It's important to all of us. Julie, thank you so much again.
You're very welcome. Thank you.